You're listening to Thursday Night's Arena. The River Capture is the second novel from Mary Costello, the Galway-based author whose debut novel, Academy Street, won the Irish Book Awards Book of the Year in 2014. In The River Capture, 34-year-old Luke O'Brien has taken time out of his English teaching job in Dublin to recover from a romantic breakup. He's gone back to the empty family home in the countryside for some peace and quiet. Then one day, a young woman and her dog turn up looking for a favour. Mary Costello is with me in studio now. And you know, when I read that kind of summary of the book, I think, God, I've nearly given it all away. Because this isn't a book about what happens, really, Mary, is it?
No, you're right, Sean. On the surface of it, ostensibly, it looks like a love story. You know, Ruth turns up in his door. But really, it's, for me anyway, it became one man's quest for consciousness. Luke is 34 years old. He retreats to the country, really. But it really is about his quest for self-knowledge. You know, there's lots of things going on. The river is central to it. There is a love story, without a doubt, and there is some plot. And it's also about how life can get upended when fate or events from the past intervene and throw people off course.
Yeah, because in fact, the big plot turning point, and we'll come back to that because it has to do with the title of the book. In fact, the big plot turning point is an event from the past that comes back to haunt several of the characters. In fact, but it's very hard to avoid from the very outset the Joycean influences in this book. There's Luke, we find him eating his breakfast, you know, just like the beginning of Ulysses. And he's going to go off on a bit of a wander. Not over the space of one day, but he goes off on this trip around and very much describes all the various places he goes. And he himself is obsessed, you could say, with Joyce's Ulysses. How did that manifest itself for you when you were writing this book?
Originally, the book was going to be from Ellen's point of view, the older woman.
Who's Luke's aunt.
Who's Luke's aunt and who is a character in the book. And it was, I suppose, more like Academy Street in its essence, an older woman telling her story, a life story. In this case, a woman who had been wronged in some way. But very quickly, you know, perhaps even before I started the book, Luke took over. He emerged. And it became more and more about Luke's journey. And Luke, like myself, is a big lover of Joyce. And, you know, it didn't take long before Bloom and Joyce and Ulysses kind of burst into the novel. I was rereading Ulysses around that time. I had, you know, studied Joyce in college and liked him, but, you know, it was a very far off memory. And I started rereading Ulysses about 7 or 8 years ago, propped it up in a book stand on my kitchen table, you know, and I just fell in love with him all over again, you know. And I had read Ellman and I had read Brenda Maddox's Nora and
Joyce. Ellman being the big biography of
Joyce,
yeah.
And Joyce's letters and lots of other stuff. And throughout the writing of that, I felt very close to Joyce. He really became my muse in a way, you know. I felt him close every day. And the truth was, there were days, you know, and I would think, I can't believe he's dead. You know, it was that, I almost felt grief for him at times, you know. So he couldn't but make his way into the book I was writing. And I, you know, put him in through Luke in a way. I think every writer does that. You know, writing is autobiographical in a way.
Yeah, and Luke was a teacher in Belvedere. Stephen Dedalus was in Belvedere, you know. So there are parallels that are there for the reader to pick up along the way. But I suppose one of the things I found interesting is, I think it's safe to say Ulysses is an urban book. This is a very rural book. I'm not suggesting that you were saying I'm going to do the rural Ulysses, but was there some aspect of bringing Joyce into the countryside that you were looking at?
Never actually crossed my mind. I never thought of that. No, and in fact, even the presence of the river, somebody afterwards pointed out, of course, all Joyce's books are about the rivers. Yeah. And again, of course, when you sit back and think about it, there it is. But at the time when I was writing it, that wasn't conscious at all. It evolved. Yeah. It was very organic in that sense. I think Joyce was there. He was so, so present. And, you know, there were times when I doubted, thinking, gosh, this is silly, but I would have deprived the book of some integrity and certainly deprived Luke of some honesty if I'd left him out because he was threaded through his thoughts.
Yeah, and Luke just loves to quote little sections from Joyce and use Joycean terms along the way as well. And in fact, when that love story starts to blossom. Joyce is a great connection between those two characters as well.
Yes, I think I remember reading that William Faulkner said about Joyce, Joyce was electrocuted by divine fire. And it's the best description I can think about Joyce as well. Ulysses is probably the fullest account we have in literature of what it means to be human, because Bloom does everything, you know. He celebrates everything from going to the toilet to frying a kidney to gazing at the stars and thinking about the transmigration of souls. And it's often forgotten that he's probably, I suppose it's a kind of a manifesto for kindness and pacifism as well. Bloom is really a great advocate for compassion and a great feminist, you know. He's about the only man in the book who thinks about women's lives tenderly, you know.
The other thing, and I think Luke says this at one point, talking about Joyce, he talks about the commitment to the quotidian.
Yes.
And in fact, that's what you have committed to here as well. We really do follow Luke pottering around the place. Yeah, of course, people come. The character Ruth comes to visit, comes to the house with the dog. The relationship grows. He goes to his aunt. Things from the past come in and intrude upon everything. But it kind of is in the process of everyday happening that these big events take place.
It is, it is. And it, and the second half, which is a Q&A section, and it's a homage to Joyce's second last episode, the Ithaca section of...
Yeah, let's just explain that Q&A, if you like. So I suppose it's about two-thirds of the way in, isn't it? Suddenly, now, a big event has happened, so that's part of... A big event from the past has intruded on the lives here, and we're being careful not to say what that big event is. But what we get then is almost... you ask a question, what was Luke doing then? You know, what did he think about the difference between wine, I think it is, and what's that, and spirits, is that one of them? I think is another one of them. So you just ask these questions and then a paragraph of answers. Did you write it in that fashion?
I did.
Question, answer, as opposed to here's a bundle of questions, I'll go back and answer them later.
No, it literally came easily enough like that as well. After there is a dilemma, there's, you know, about halfway through the book, Luke encounters a problem and he has to make a choice, and it throws him into a crisis, psychological crisis and an emotional crisis. And you know, in order to deal with that crisis, there is a sort of a distancing of himself. It's almost like he's self-questioning, or the reader is questioning him. The reader is there by proxy in a way, and it's a distancing himself from the emotional intensity of what he's feeling. And it was very much, it came to very quickly, because I suppose I was so close to Joyce at the time, and the Ithaca section of Joyce, which is a Q&A, is my favourite section of Ulysses.
Right.
You know, so that was primarily, and I suppose the river theme then as well kicked in.
Yeah, and that's where the title, The River Capture, where does that term come from and what exactly does it mean?
It's a geological phenomenon when a river suddenly changes direction, and its own natural course changes. So it would have entered the sea in one point and it suddenly takes a 90 degree turn and changes direction. It takes over the drainage system of another older river, which is, it usually drops down below. And when I read about it, I was intrigued by the whole idea. And Luke, of course, in the book, this happens at his river.
He lives on a river called the Salan River. There is a real Salan, you were telling me, but this is your Salan, not the real
there
one.
There is. A few friends have written and said, oh, the River Salan's in Kerry, West Cork, and it's a small little tributary and perhaps to a bigger river, a beautiful little river. And I borrowed the name, the Salan, for my river. But yes, Luke lives on the bend of this river, and all his life he's been aware of this river capture, and he's very sensitive, and I suppose he's very porous to the sort of vibrations and intuitions of the landscape as well. He considers the river almost sentient, and he thinks of this change of direction that the river would have taken in ancient times, millions of years ago, as a kind of a thwarting and as a rupture and as a wound in the river. And he thinks of it he wonders if that has repercussions for the whole area around, because he's very sensitive to the town and the poverty and the lives of people. And he wonders if that had repercussions down over the ages. So he's that sort of a person who's sensitive to the vibrations of the landscape.
And it's literally that idea, I suppose, if the past can cause such a problem to the present theologically, can it do it emotionally, exactly, and in the lives, yeah, of the characters? Yeah. I suppose that's one, yeah, of the bigger themes that are there. When I'm speaking to you now, Mary, you're a very different interviewee and a different writer, I would even go, or the way you speak about your writing, certainly, from the woman I spoke to back when you published your first collection of stories, which actually was your first publication.
The China Factory, yes.
The China Factory, sorry. Back in, when was that?
2012, yeah.
But you had been writing on the fly, on the QT, for a long, long time. What was it, do you think, Yamika? Let me see it clearer now. What was it that said to you, do you know what, I'm fed up with these things stuck in the drawer and I'm not showing them to anybody. What was it that changed your mind there?
I think I had entered my 40s. I had been writing since my early 20s and had a couple of stories published in New Irish Writing and shortlisted for the Hennessy Award. I got married young and was teaching full-time, living in suburbia, happy with my life, and stories would push up and I'd write a few, but I didn't seem to be able to integrate everything. You know, I had a couple of stories published and then no more. And I don't remember if I sent some out and was rejected, but I wasn't able to accommodate writing and teaching and being married. I just couldn't. And so that I remember writing felt like an interruption and it felt like a disturbance in my life. I didn't welcome it. And at the same time, stories kept pushing up. They wouldn't go away. But I had no ideas that I wanted to be a writer or anything, but they wouldn't go away. And I would write stories and put them away and I'd write more and I'd feel I'd be relieved of it. And I'd purge it. That's that done for a while. And they'd come up again. And I even wrote a novel, or, you know, a terrible novel back then. But I was almost writing in secret. Hardly anyone knew I was writing. It felt like something that I wanted to, I often say this line, I wanted to be normal. I wanted to be like my friends and my sisters. Yeah. I wanted to be like everyone else, normal. And it wouldn't go away. So I got into my 30s then and, you know, life gets in the way. But I remember in my 40s then I was considering, well, I give this up for good.
Give the writing up for good.
Yeah, and let it try and just get over it.
That'll be that finished with.
I think I went to therapy about it. But, yeah. But anyway, I did send a few stories. I considered taking a career break. I sent a few stories out to the Stinging Fly at the time and they liked them and wanted to publish them and that was it.
Once the publishing was done. Then it seems as if it was all plain sailing from there on. Because Academy Street grew out of one of the stories, if I remember right, in the China Factory, didn't it?
It did.
It kind of expanded out into a novel. Yeah. And both have been serialised on radio at various times along the way, and the Book Awards, they set a sort of stories nominated for the Guardian First Book Awards as well. Mm. I mean, it must have been such a stamp of approval to get those awards, to have stuff broadcast in the way that it was, and for the books to be the success that they were. What did that mean when it came to writing book number three, novel number two? Did it put pressure on, or did it give you the freedom to say, do you know what, this is what I'm doing now, I'm running with it?
Yeah. No, it was hard. It was hard. You know, it's lovely to get validated and I do feel very lucky because a lot of very good books don't get that attention. So I'm always very, very grateful. But of course, yes, my publishers, I had a two-book deal with Canongate, my publishers, and I was due actually to turn in this new book in the end of 2015. I turned it in the end of 2018, 3 years late, and they were wonderful. I never, you know, the Canongate are really a dream publisher for me anyway. They never put an ounce of pressure on me, but it was difficult. I think you always wonder if you're a one trick pony, no matter what, one collection of stories, one book, and you always wonder, will you ever write again? So it doesn't come easy, but you know, when you're doing it, it's great. But I'm also very realistic that you can dry up, you know, and I have, you know, periods when I have nothing to say, you know, but at the same time, it won't go away.
The other thing I'm wondering is, if I went through Luke's reading list in The River Capture, would I be looking at your bookshelves,
you
more or less?
You would indeed. Yes. Everything that's there is.
So, and there are little quotes throughout the book in italics. I was asking this before, and I thought maybe they were all from Joyce, but they're from your own reading.
They are, yeah. People that inspire me, you know, Coetzee is in there, and Calvino, and Derek Mahon's poem, A Disused Shed in County Wexford. So I have hopped from a lot of things. It's the sort of things, I had great fun writing, especially the second half of that book, because Luke's state of mind was somewhat fragile, and he was riffing on things and letting rip on things, on his theories of evolution, his theories of human extinction and everything. So I felt I had freedom to riff on all those things. I'm not saying that all of Luke's opinions are all of mine, but I think this is a question that, you know, arises for most writers. A lot of us are in there. You know, Flaubert was asked, who is Madame Bovary? And he said, Madame Bovary, c'est moi. And I feel that about Luke. You know,
Little
I'm not...
Brian, c'est moi.
Exactly.
Do you know what book number four will be? I mean, I know you're probably going to say, Sean, let me get book number three up and running. But we've had a set of short stories. We've had two novels now. Do you know even whether you're looking at stories or a novel next?
I have some stories on the go, but I haven't written a story for a good while. But I have notebooks for a novel as well, very different to either of these, but I haven't started anything. But notebooks are accumulating. I have to have the ammo, as James Salter called his notebooks, the ammo, his ammunition. He had to have a lot of ammo compiled before he could start something.
Well, here's hoping that Mary Costello continues to amass that ammunition and fire something new to us in the next while. In the meantime, her new book is called The River Capture. It's published by Canongate, as we heard there, and Mary Costello will be in conversation with Nadine O'Regan at the DLR Lexicon Library in Dunleary on the 23rd of October, and that event takes place at 7 p.m. You can find out full details on eventbrite.ie.